At the legislature today, election law must keep up with the latest technology as it relates to how candidates campaign. A report from the House tonight. And in the Senate, one member abandons his bill that was meant to address childhood obesity and the use of welfare benefits. This is the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. With state primary elections coming in May and the general election in November, the House Judiciary Committee took a look at current code that prohibits elected officials and candidates from soliciting public employees. As Aaron Payne reports, the law needed to be updated to include how emails should be treated.
Today, the House Judiciary Committee discussed House Bill 4414 relating to the solicitation of public employees by an elected officer of the state. Chairman Tim Manchin explains the main purpose of the bill is to update the language of current code to include modern technology and to better define what would qualify as solicitation.
The bill was basically designed to make it clear under our current election laws that electronic communications were the same as soliciting somebody in person, so that public employees are not to be solicited directly at their offices, whether it be at the county commissions or whether it be in the state house, for funds or for support. That was the other part of what the bill did, was it made clear and clarified that support is more than just monetary contributions. It can include asking people to come out and put up signs or to go door to door for you or to drive you someplace, those sorts of things.
Investigations into solicitation are currently handled by the Secretary of State's office. Assistant Legal Counsel Tim Leach was in attendance to answer questions about the current problem with solicitation in West Virginia.
My question is, how many people have we prosecuted for under this act in the last 10 or 20 years?
Gee, I've only been here five.
How many people have we prosecuted in the last 5 years?
We haven't prosecuted anybody under this. We've had some discussions with prosecutors. We've had a number of occasions where this has come up, and we have gone to the candidates or the campaigns involved and asked them what they were doing. And told, many of our, I think I've given this statistic before, but many of our cases end up in what we call educational moments, letters of instruction, and if you will, to the campaign saying, you know, you're on notice, this was not done right, don't do it that way in the future, or you'll be facing a different type of response.
And do you think changing the language in this section will make it easier for you to educate candidates?
If they bother to read it, I suppose so, yes.
Chairman Manchin spoke of an instance in which the office did not prosecute, but instead spoke with a candidate, which set in motion the need for the bill.
Part of the need for it arose out of an incident up in the northern part of the state where a former employee of the courthouse was running for office afterwards and was soliciting support through the email addresses, the public email addresses of those of existing employees.
Delegates then raised many questions about what would and would not constitute as solicitation of public employees. Delegate Linda Longstreth asked if punishment would be enforced if an elected official or candidate unknowingly sent such an email as part of a mailing list.
If we have a mailing list, and most of us, I probably do, have a mailing list that we send out, and a lot of people are on there, work for the government. That's a whole different scenario. Is that correct? We would not know. I mean, we'd have to go through the mailing list to check. I don't know who all works for the government, to be honest, that I send out, you know, information to. So is that a case-by-case basis?
It is a case-by-case basis. If you had a mixed mailing list, some of them were .gov. I mean, speaking before the case is ever presented to me, you know, if I saw an effort to remove the .govs from the list, but you didn't get everybody, or some, if you presented some explanation for I'm trying to comply with this law, I don't think it's a big issue. If you deliberately obtain some way by FOIA or by the from the state directory, state government employees' names and email addresses, you know, you're on notice. You went to the state employee directory to get those email addresses.
Absolutely.
That's a much harder case for you to defend your actions, in my view.
As confusion grew, the committee moved to amend the bill in an attempt to clearly state what elected officials and candidates can do. The committee substitute for the bill was approved to be reported to the floor with the recommendation that it do pass. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
A number of children's health issues are making their way through the Senate. But today, the lead sponsor of one of those bills chose to redraft his legislation in the form of a resolution for Congress. Ashton Mara reports.
Your Committee on Finance.
While new studies show the rate of childhood obesity in West Virginia is falling, about one in four children is still considered obese. The state is working to decrease that number by increasing physical activity in schools, using farm-to-school programs to bring in fresh fruits and vegetables, and limiting what children have access to in vending machines. In particular, schools have focused on taking sodas and sugary drinks out, replacing them with healthier options.
The idea of limiting a child's access to soda is nothing new. In 2008, the State Board of Education voted to ban its sale in schools. But now, lawmakers are looking to restrict that access at home as well.
A bill introduced in the Senate would direct the State Department of Health and Human Resources to apply for a waiver with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The waiver would prohibit the purchase of soda and junk foods with Supplemental Assistance Nutrition Program benefits, or food stamps. Its sponsor, Senator Ron Stallings, says the intent was to control the obesity and poor oral health epidemics ravaging children in low-income families across the state.
In general, if you look at the statistics, the more affluent folks have more access to oral health, don't tend to be as overweight. Okay, so these SNAP benefits, supplemental nutrition benefits, have a way of having a very good outcome or a very bad outcome, depending on how you spend the money. And sometimes we're not using the wisest choice of foods when we're in our stores.
In the past, states like New York and California have applied for waivers and were denied, which industry representatives say shows the federal government isn't interested in taking on the issue.
Nationally, the USDA has never granted such a waiver and has really indicated that it's not inclined to do so because there's really no basis in this instance to restrict, particularly in the sense that folks that qualify for SNAP and folks that do not show the same usage, and the obesity rate is the same for folks that qualify for SNAP and folks that don't. So we really see it as a solution looking for a problem and think the better solution would be educating our children and families.
But advocates say education isn't enough.
We agree that education is important, but unfortunately the course of action that we've taken up until this point has been education, and look where it's gotten us. So while education is great, we need to begin to do something more. And so we know that if we can really focus on prevention, we're going to be in a better off position.
Stallings, however, decided against continuing his legislation and is opting for a resolution instead, calling on Congress to change the benefits. After voting to cut the program by more than $8 billion last week, Stallings says now is the time for federal action for all states, not just West Virginia.
The DHHR said that if you had legislative intent, that we might be further along and might actually be able to get the waiver. So that's why the bill would have been important. So it would show that the legislature of West Virginia compelled the DHHR to apply for the waiver. The weight of the legislature would be behind the concept. This way, the resolution, if we can get it passed, would call on Congress to make changes for all the states, not just the one state.
His resolution also calls for incentives for those families who are making healthy choices by giving them an increase, so to speak, in benefits.
You'd get 25% more buying power if you were spending it on, like, fresh fruits and vegetables, particularly.
Stallings says this resolution is about influencing the public to make better choices for their children. He admits this bill won't do it alone, but is advocating for other legislation to increase physical activity and access to nutrition, hoping they all work together to ensure a healthier generation of West Virginians for the future. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
In a moment, making West Virginia communities the best they can be. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 498, to permit a person to possess firearms other than shotguns and rifles in a vehicle or conveyance without a concealed deadly weapons permit. Senate Bill 503, to revise, rearrange, consolidate, and recodify the laws of the state of West Virginia relating to child welfare. And Senate Bill 507, to change the membership of the Board of Barbers and Cosmetologists. The bill requires the board to offer examinations in other languages, if available, and upon request. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 336, to allow police, fire, and emergency service providers to possess naloxone to administer in suspected narcotic drug overdoses. Senate Bill 397, expanding the scope of activities considered financial exploitation of the elderly and making the crime a larceny. On second reading in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 426, to alleviate any lapse in filling vacancies and to ensure that members are not forced to serve beyond their appointment time. Senate Bill 450, to define a public place to clarify that facilities licensed to sell alcoholic liquors may do so in outdoor dining areas. And Senate Bill 470, to provide that completed grand jury questionnaire forms are confidential and may only be released from custody of the clerk with written permission of the circuit court. The West Virginia Community Development Hub in Fairmont has a number of initiatives that build communities in a variety of ways. One of these is Blueprint Communities. This initiative, which began about a year ago, provides training, coaching, and technical assistance to six communities from a 12-county region around the Summit Bechtel Boy Scout Reserve. The communities are Bluefield, Hinton, Marlinton, Princeton, Richwood, and Sophia. Joining us to talk about this important effort is Kent Spellman, the Executive Director of the West Virginia Community Development Hub, and Stephanie Tyree, the Director of Community Engagement and Policy. Welcome to you both. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Beth.
What exactly is Blueprint Communities? What do you want to do?
Imagine a blueprint. You need a blueprint in order to build. And what we're trying to do is help communities create a blueprint to build their communities for a stronger and more sustainable future.
Mm-hmm. And how can they do that?
You know, every community is different. They all find a different path towards improvement. In these six communities that we worked with this past year, there are six different paths. We really believe that communities have the capacity to figure out what is best for them. And we encourage them to do that, and we try to provide them with some tools, some coaching, some technical assistance to help them determine the best path forward and to help them build the tools they need to drive towards success in achieving those goals.
Now, these communities were picked because they are around the Boy Scout Reserve. And because so many people are coming in for the Boy Scouts, obviously you wanted these towns to really shine. Is that the whole point? Is that it?
Yeah, it is. And there's an opportunity there. We want to make the best impression in West Virginia that we can when these folks are coming to the Boy Scout facility there. It's an outstanding facility. And if we can make a great impression, we believe it's a great long-term economic development tool for West Virginia.
You've brought a video, an example for us. Set this up. What will we see?
Sure. This is a great example. Princeton is one of those great communities that has taken the blueprint opportunity and really just run with it. They have a unique approach. They have a downtown that was really struggling. There was a lot of crime. There was some prostitution. There were a lot of drug activities. And they realized that in order to try to improve that downtown, the first thing they had to do is to get people comfortable in coming back downtown. So they've gone through this great initiative to bring public art, to restore an old theater, to host a whole series of great events in downtown Princeton that's turning that community around.
Let's let that video tell the story, all right?
Great.
Let's take a look.
Team Princeton has been a model of cities working toward economic and downtown revitalization. There's been a collective of creative individuals opening businesses, fostering artistic expression, while sprucing up old properties and buying into the tenets of the Blueprint program. Team member Lori McKinney explains.
The timing for Princeton was really specific because there was already a lot of momentum focused on our downtown, and the Blueprint Communities program was perfect timing for us. We were able to come up with a really multifaceted downtown development plan, and the cornerstone of that has been the restoration of our old theater.
The recently christened Renaissance Theater has become the epicenter for film screenings, live music, and charitable events on Mercer Street. Greg Puckett talks about how the efforts have spread not only to Princeton, but to Mercer County as well.
When we started Blueprint and we formed the Princeton Renaissance Project, it not only opened us up to Mercer Street, but it also got the conversation started about what else is going to take place in Princeton. Is the municipal building going to move downtown? Is the college going to move downtown? What businesses can we have? And not only can we have on Mercer Street, but what businesses can Princeton and the entire Mercer County community have? By working together and across all sectors, it's been extraordinarily effective.
The group has worked hard to promote the downtown area while convincing the community and local government to buy into the development of Mercer Street. Puckett's assessment of the project's reach is very much in line with McKinney's take on how the community has responded.
From the get-go, when we put out the surveys, we were having hundreds of responses right away. And everyone seemed to be in agreement that the old theater should get restored. So as soon as we made that announcement, then people of all ages, from all backgrounds, were instantly engaged. And it's been just, straight uphill from there.
One example is a sold-out feature film premiere of A Christmas Tree Miracle that starred Princeton native Kevin Sizemore. The event attracted 1,000 people and doubled as a fundraiser for the theater restoration. McKinney elaborates on the lessons she has learned as part of the Blueprint team and how it can affect other communities.
The civic engagement component was a very valuable lesson. They gave us ideas for getting input, and they showed us how to design community meetings specifically for the point of allowing people to express their opinions and feel invested in the process, and I think that was a valuable lesson.
Puckett also gives his thoughts on lessons learned and the strength of teamwork within the community.
Teamwork actually does work, and if you've channeled in the right direction and making sure that everybody's at the table in the right time, that's really where the strength comes from. And, that's been extremely motivational for all of us. I mean, we've just come together, we've felt like a community, and we've seen other people jump into the fray. We've never seen that before. In our lifetime, my lifetime, it's been 40 years since people have been effectively wanting to be downtown. And I think that's what Blueprint did for us, and that's what it's going to continue to do for us.
Although the hard work involved in the Blueprint program can be somewhat tedious, McKinney says to embrace the process across the board.
If you're going through this program, I wouldn't turn your nose up to the paperwork or feel like you're wasting your time, because it all has a purpose.
Puckett sums up the positive effects of rebuilding a community and how it can spread not only within a city, but to the entire area.
You're taking a community of 62,000 people, and you've got two of the major cities that are in that community that are doing amazing things, trying to do the revitalization work. And when you do that, it then starts spreading out to other areas. It starts spreading out to Bluewell, Brushfork, Athens, Oakville, all those places. And I think you're really starting to see people take a little bit more pride, a little bit more hope, and a little bit more sort of an energy that we haven't had here in a very long time.
Princeton celebrated the progress and lessons learned of the past year as a Blueprint community with the 2014 Downtown Countdown on Mercer Street, complete with entertainment, food, and a Southern West Virginia twist on a Times Square ball drop.
4, 3, 2, 1, Happy New Year!
That really looks great. Is it ongoing, or are they done?
Oh, no.
Oh, they're not done.
No, they're just getting started. You watch them over the next few years. It's going to be very impressive.
You were at the legislature today. What for?
We were there with our HubCap program. So HubCap is the Hub's Communities of Achievement program, and it's what we consider the 2.0 community development program. Mm-hmm. So it's communities that are moving from the blueprint stage to the project implementation stage. We had 6 communities with over 40 team members there today, mm-hmm. being recognized with the Senate resolution.
Which 6?
We had Clay County, Lincoln and Logan County, Wayne County, Martinsburg, Bealington, and...
Lincoln, Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Chester.
Chester.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And these folks have gone through the blueprint process.
Not necessarily.
Not yet. Okay.
They're just in a they're in a space in their community where they have identified a project, they have a strong team together, and the team is moving towards implementing that project.
Okay.
And it's all locally determined and driven.
What kind of projects? Can you give us an example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Bealington is looking at purchasing and renovating the Golden Rule building. And so it would be it's a major building in the town, and they're going to create community business, local business spaces, and take advantage of the Polar Express, which runs through the town but doesn't actually stop in the town and could stop at the Golden Rule building.
It's very good. Are you seeking anything from the legislature? Do you have to go and ask the legislators for something?
It wasn't about us seeking anything from the legislature. Yeah. The hub doesn't lobby for any specific legislation. What we do is we build pathways for community members and community teams to learn how to work with their elected officials and how to get the support from them for their projects. So we brought them up for a legislative day to talk about the projects that they're working on in their teams and see how their elected officials could support them in their projects. Mm-hmm. And they all expressed significant support today.
Good. You also have an initiative, very quickly, Turn This Town Around, and it sounds like you're already doing that in Princeton and all these other cities.
We are doing that, and one of the things that we found is that working with these communities in Blueprint and Hubcap has taught us so much. And this partnership, Turn This Town Around, is with New South Media, which publishes West Virginia Living, mm-hmm. and with West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Ta-da.
And the great thing about this is that we are going to focus on two communities, one in the northern part of the state, one in the southern part of the state. And we're going to really intensively watch what happens over the course of the year through public broadcasting's coverage of it and also through this new magazine, West Virginia Focus, mm-hmm. which is dealing with community and economic development issues in West Virginia.
And we look forward to hearing more about Turn This Town Around. I'm afraid we're out of time. But Stephanie Tyree and Kent Spellman, West Virginia Community Development Hub, thank you very much. Very interesting. Good
Thank
luck with
you.
It.
So much, Beth.
And here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4419, to create a tax credit for parents and guardians of autistic children contributing to a qualified trust fund against their personal income tax obligations, and to create the West Virginia Children with Autism Trust Fund. House Bill 4421, to allow the lottery to pay prizes by electronic fund transfer. House Bill 4423, to require the healthcare authority to review its certificate of need standards for personal care services and provide recommendations to the legislature and the governor regarding actions that might improve quality and access to personal care. House Bill 4425, to allow the superintendent of the state police to hire additional staff to include legal counsel. House Bill 4429, to require that mining equipment being transported or trammed underground where energized trolley wire exists, other than ordinary sectional movement, be done by qualified personnel under the supervision of a certified foreman. And House Bill 4433, to create a procedure for any applicant or recipient of TANF benefits who fails an initial drug test, be required to undergo treatment and to pass a second drug test to maintain eligibility for such benefits. The bill ensures confidentiality of records. Up for passage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 4010, to adopt the Uniform Real Property Electronic Recording Act as it relates to land record documents. And House Bill 4220, relating to a waiver of a jury trial in claims arising from consumer transactions in favor of mandatory arbitration, must be a separate court document. On second reading, House Bill 4214, to encourage and assist persons diagnosed with schizophrenia to designate a durable medical power of attorney to assist the patient in avoiding future involuntary commitments when the person becomes unstable. House Bill 4278, to rewrite the procedure by which corporations may obtain authorization from the West Virginia Board of Medicine to practice medicine and surgery. And House Bill 4336, to give the State Board of Education no more than 5 years to improve any school or school system under its control. The bill also requires the State Board to hold a public hearing if it seeks to take control of a school system again. And this has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, Ashton Mara is your host as we continue our series of discussions with our colleagues from the Capitol Press Corps. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night. We'll be right back.
Support for the legislature today provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at WVHTF.org. And by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at WVAFLCIO.org.